I'm so excited to have you here, and I almost feel like it's like birthing a baby, and you hope the baby is like cute and not ugly, or inviting someone, inviting someone to a party that you have told them is going to be excellent, and you just hope someone shows up and that it's okay. Like that's kind of, I have this nervous energy going on, and anyway, it's good. To introduce myself, I'm Leanne McAllister. I'm one of the pastors here at Living Waters, and this is something that I've dreamed for this community and open it up to other communities around us, just to share the message that women are free to lead. And so we're glad that you're here. Now, you might be really excited that you're here going, yeah, leadership. Or perhaps you're going, my girlfriend, like, dragged me here, and I don't have a hot clue why I'm here. Well, whatever your situation is, we just welcome you here, and we want to say that you are in the right place. This event is called Free to Lead, and really a personal dream of mine, but also a dream of Living Waters to encourage women in their leadership, in their homes, in their schools, in their workplaces, and yes, even church. And our prayer is that as you leave here, much like Doug said earlier, that you'll leave here with a greater understanding of who you are and what you've been created for. And we also hope that you'll be inspired to try something new, inspired to take a risk and maybe try something that scares you a little bit. I don't know about you, but I find it kind of confusing to be a woman in our world today. Is anyone else confused? The barrage of mixed messages that women receive every single day of our lives is crazy. And when you actually open your eyes to it, you'll see it everywhere. Whether it's in advertising or blogs or books or just your neighbor's opinion about what should be happening. And it's just everywhere. You're constantly getting these messages. We are supposed to be sexy, right? Is that not like kind of the number one thing? Like honestly, if we look around, we're supposed to be sexy. But let's remember, we're supposed to be virginal. Have you ever noticed the dichotomy that's there? Sexy but virginal. We're told to be powerful, raw, raw, yeah, women, but just don't get shrill. There's a message out there that a good woman actually sacrifices herself for the sake of others. And at the same time, we're told to put ourselves first. These contradictions were really highlighted to me about 6 months ago. When Sheryl Sandberg, who's the chief operating officer for Facebook, released a book called Lean In. Has anyone read it yet? Good girls. It's a great book, Lean In, which I read it with real interest, where if you kind of boil down the message of her book, she's essentially saying that women are guilty of taking their foot off the pedal of their careers at a time when really they should be leaning in. And her message is, just go for it. And a lot of people criticized her and said, you're just blaming women. Like, it is hard for women. But basically, she said, you know, put your big girl panties on and, like, get out there and lead, right? Okay, so that book came out, it doesn't matter, 6 months ago. At the very same time, another high-powered woman, her name is Erin Callen, and she was the CFO for Lehman Brothers, she revealed in her book that she deeply regrets the sacrifices she made for her job and told working women, it's not worth it. Two books, two women, same week. These mixed messages and this dichotomy actually kind of reminds me of a Pinterest board. Have you ever noticed you have like rock hard abs right next to the gooey brownies on a Pinterest board, right? It's like, whoa, which one do I want? Brownies, right? So, I think it's confusing. But I'm going to suggest that it's even more confusing in the church. It has always been confusing in the church. This is not a new phenomenon, my friends. From the beginning of Christianity, the changing attitudes towards women have swung hugely, mostly between two extremes. For the first 1800 years, women were seen as the temptress. And so you can read Plato and Aristotle, and from that you can conclude that the culture believed that men were ontologically superior to women. And think about this, the church just went along with that for 1800 years and agreed that yes, men are superior to women. 1800 years. Beginning in the 19th century, this crazy shift happened when many of these assumptions about women's inferiority began to be challenged. You'd think that was great news, right? Well, instead of being seen as devilish and inferior, the pendulum swung to the other extreme, and women began to be kind of like lifted up onto pedestals. And they began to be seen as innocent and delicate little creatures that served as moral guardians of the society. And so while women were being lifted up in many ways, they were still confined to the narrow roles, the sphere of home that's based on Victorian ideals. So it's interesting, when people talk about going back to, you know, we just got to get back to the basics, we need to get back to the biblical ideals for the role of women, some would argue, actually, they want to go back to the Victorian days. The confusion continues today, from bloggers to conferences to books. Oh my goodness. Everyone has a passionate opinion on the roles and responsibilities for Christian women. From Mark Driscoll to Sarah Bessie, there is talk, talk, talk. And it's interesting because it actually has heated up since probably the mid-80s. This wasn't such a hot topic. And it's interesting because you would think it would start to kind of you know, ebb a little bit, but it's just getting hotter and hotter for a whole lot of reasons we won't go into right now. What does this all mean? I believe that there is a whole generation of women, you and me included, that are confused about the role and almost frightened to step out into anything in case they cross any lines. They're frightened to do anything that maybe God wouldn't want them to do. And I believe that women today inside the church and also outside the church are deep into an identity crisis, where they're asking one of the most fundamental human questions that one can ask, and that is, who am I? Why am I here? And for Christian women, what am I free to do? What does this actually mean biblically to be a Christian woman in Canada in 2014? Are you confused? Like, honestly, do you think about this stuff? Okay. We do leadership development at Living Waters. I partner with Julie Simeon in this, and we've just finished our third cohort of taking women through leadership development. And the very first time, we were literally writing the course as we were teaching it. Shh, don't tell anyone. But the very first module was on, you know, kind of like, what is leadership? And we were going to talk about that, and it was all going to be great. And then we were going to gloss over the biblical mandate for women in leadership, because we thought, oh, they attend Living Waters, they see women in the pulpit, they see women on our council, this will be no big deal. We can just gloss over this and get onto the other stuff. And what we discovered very quickly is that women, even in Living Waters, were deeply conflicted about this issue. How can you walk out in freedom when you don't feel the freedom? How do you walk out in freedom when your dad, and the things that he said, or your church pastor from way back when, or Mark Driscoll, or this, like when all of these people are swirling about, how do you actually walk out in freedom? So that's kind of what we're going to talk about in our time together. And I hope that we help answer some of that through our main sessions, but also through our breakouts tomorrow. We have 6 breakouts that I think you're just going to really, really enjoy. But this is our starting point. which I make no apology for. There is and always has been a radical place for women in God's economy. I'm going to say it again because it's that good. There is and always has been a radical place for women in God's economy. Okay, let me prove it to you. We're going to start with the Daughters of Zelophehad. Now, has anyone heard of the Daughters of Zelophehad? Okay, these are great girls. Let me tell you about them. Zelophehad was a man who died while in the desert on the way to the Promised Land. So the Israelites came out of Egypt. They're in the desert, and he died there. He had five daughters and no sons. And the law didn't allow for the daughters to inherit his property. And I guess this bothered them, and they wouldn't accept this ruling, and they challenged it. And they went before Moses and the elders. Now, let's think about how intimidating this would have been in that culture. But they went before the elders and made a case that was accepted. There was a stipulation. They had to stay married within the tribe to keep the property within the tribe. But what they did in challenging the status quo had ramifications for generations and generations and generations that protected women and future heirs from poverty. That's the daughters. Don't you love them? Personal favorites. How about Deborah? Deborah is the only woman that is given the title judge in the Old and New Testament. She held court under a palm tree in northern Israel. Now, the Hebrew word actually translates better to ruler. And judges served in a time when Israel was without a king and was surrounded by people that were constantly invading them and all that kind of stuff. And so the judges were leaders that were called upon, particularly when they needed to go into battle. The judges were there to kick butt. And Deborah, who was married, I gotta love that guy. I don't know if we know his name. But Deborah was married, and her husband supported her in her God-given role. That's my guy who supports me right there. You're on your... he supported her in that role. And Deborah is known for her military campaign, particularly against King Jabin of Canaan. And this king, with his general Sisera, had been waging a cruel campaign against Israel for 20 years. And Deborah, with a man named Barak, raised up 10,000 soldiers to follow them into battle. And Jabin and Sisera were defeated, with Sisera being killed by a woman named Jael, who drove a spike through his head. I mean, this is in Scripture. Throughout Deborah's leadership and faith and courage, Israel went on into an extended time of peace. Well, let's look at Jesus. Jesus was born into a very male-dominated world where men influenced control over women. And a woman's experience depended upon what kind of man that she lived under the protection of. So this worked out well for some women because lots of men were good, but others were not. And as a result, women were vulnerable to abuse and victimization. See, Jesus taught us how to live. And so we read his words, but we also look at how he lived and what he modeled. So in a system where education was off limits to females, just reserved for males, Jesus encouraged women to learn. I don't think we get how radical and unusual this is. We can read in Luke chapter 10, when Jesus goes and goes to Martha's house and her sister Mary, and you know Martha's busy in the kitchen and Mary's sitting at Jesus' feet. Amazing that she was sitting there taking it all in. And he not only condoned it, but he said, I encourage this. Martha, you're missing on this one because Mary's chosen the really, really good thing here. We read in Luke that women were counted among Jesus' greatest friends and ministry supporters. We read in Mark that Jesus ignored the purity laws that said you couldn't touch a woman who was menstruating. The problem is this woman had her period for 12 years. Can you imagine anything worse than that? right? Darcy, you don't get it. Sorry, guys, I forgot you were here. You'll do the counseling. You'll take the men. Actually, I told these guys, stay. This is going to be good for you. Can we just say this is not a woman issue? This is a community thing that we need to talk about. And our brothers are not our adversaries. They're our best friends as we stand shoulder to shoulder. Amen. I hear that. Okay. So this woman with her period for 12 years. It was a drag. So, this woman with her period. Okay, sorry, don't egg me on. It doesn't help me. So, 12 years. Now, okay, so that's not a fun thing to do, but we don't understand also that because of that, she was unclean and outside of her community. So she not only had a physical issue going on, she also had a community issue, and she was all alone. And so Jesus breaks the law, touches her, heals her. She's restored physically. She's restored back to the community because she mattered. We can look at John 4, probably one of the most famous accounts, the woman at the well. And this woman had so many strikes against her. You know, she's female, but she's also Samaritan. She has a bad reputation. She's living with a series of men, and she goes to the well at midday in case she doesn't cross-contaminate other, like, pure people. And Jesus, breaking time-honored cultural barriers, sees her, talks with her, meets her deepest need. Why? Because she mattered. You see, when we listen to the words of Jesus, and when we look at his interactions with women, he clearly elevated them. There's lots of examples throughout Scripture. There's Rahab, you know, a woman of the night, who becomes a heroine in the Old Testament. We read of Junia, who's listed among the apostles. We read of Priscilla, who was a noted teacher that actually helped Apollos with his theology because he needed some help. See, there's always been a place for women. There has always been a place for women. And while we have to do the work, we need to do the work to understand the more difficult scriptures surrounding women. If we look at Scripture in its entirety, I believe that women are free to lead. It's just all through the pages, through creation, through Jesus, through the example, it's there. Okay, I'm going to give you another. Does anyone know who I'm standing with? I'll give you a hint. I was in Ottawa. Come on, Canadians. No? Nellie McClung. Who got that one? Very good. Nellie McClung. Does anyone know about Nellie? Okay, Nellie was born in Ontario in 1873, and she moved to Manitoba at the age of 7 and began teaching in a rural school. She was passionate about everyday people around her in rural Manitoba, and her goal, in her own words, was to be a voice for the voiceless and a defender of the weak. And in her setting where she lived, this meant women and children in particular. Now, it's hard for us to believe this, but at that time, in the eyes of Canadian law, women were considered to be legally on par with the insane, criminal, and children, and they had no rights. If a woman had money or property that legally belonged to her, if she had property or money, it legally belonged to her husband, as did her wages and as did her children. So McClung was so troubled by the absence of legal recourse in cases of spousal abuse. And she would watch whole families just like falling off the rails with husbands drinking away family wages, leaving their wives, kids hungry, that kind of thing. And because women didn't have rights to their kids, leaving an abusive marriage was just impossible for women because they couldn't take their children with them. Women didn't have the right to vote. And so they had little voice or influence with politicians who could alter the laws. And women were actually not classified under Canadian law as people. And so Nellie, seeing all of this, deeply moved. Now, you have to know this about her. She was a woman of faith, a devout Christian. If you follow the roots of feminist, don't be freaked out that I just said that word, because I'm not suggesting anything. But if you follow the roots back, you will find women of faith. We don't know that. We just see the second wave, and we have some problems with that, and we go, whoa. But you look at our roots, it's all there. Okay, so Nellie worked with the Christian Temperance Union, fighting about the prohibition of alcohol. She felt that women needed the right to vote, and so in the early 1900s, she led the women of Manitoba to become the first in Canada to win the right to vote. And she didn't stop there. In 1928, the Supreme Court of Canada unanimously decided against women holding public office, as they were not people. And so she fought with four other women that were known as the Famous Five. And she took the person's case all the way to the Privy Council in Britain. And it reversed that situation. She went on to be elected in the Alberta legislature and served and promoted women's property rights, better care for school children, mother's allowances, that kind of thing. One of the most influential social activists in Canada's history. And I love that this was spearheaded by a Christian woman. You see, the work that she did was the gospel. It's the good news. Every time we bring justice to a situation, every time we bring light to darkness, it is the gospel. Every time we elevate someone and bring them dignity, it is the heart of Jesus for them. And so when we follow in those things, we are sharing the gospel. Okay, one more portrait before we go on. Does anyone know who Joy Smith is? Okay, yes, Manitoba, you would. You just had lunch with her? Well. So Joy and I were speaking together at a leadership event in Ontario last spring. And Joy is actually a Canadian politician that spearheaded the National Canadian Action Plan to combat human trafficking. So she's the one that you saw in the news that basically said, we need to do something as a nation. And she crossed the party lines to join with other people and did all sorts of amazing work around this. So here I am. Do you ever meet someone and you're just in awe? Like, I'm like, hi, my name's Leanne. You know what I mean? I'm like, hi, can I just hang around? I won't say a word. I won't say, you know. So this is how I felt with her when I was next to her. Anyway, the very interesting thing is she's talking to a group much like this of women that are interested in leadership, and she said, I took notes. She's like, you know what? There's nothing special about me. She actually said, you know, when you get right down to it, I'm a coward. But she talked about being willingness and talked about a burning desire to do something. She went through an open door. That open door led to this open door, and then one thing led to another. And now she has done so much with our laws to protect every Canadian man, woman, and child to be safe from manipulation, force, or abuse of power when it comes to human trafficking. And honestly, she's just a grandma. She's a grandma. And what's so amazing to me is how ordinary these people are. I go through life thinking everyone in the room is smarter than me. I go through life thinking everyone knows some special code or password that I have yet to receive. Right? But these are ordinary women that are willing and are open to be used. We get so freaked out by the word leadership. I can't tell you how many times I've approached amazing women that I just think are just awesome, and I think of an area where I think that they could lead in, and more often than not, they look at me with like terror in their eyes, and like they want to back out, and like, oh, don't make eye contact with her, you know. And often what they'll say to me is, you know, I'm happy to help someone. Maybe I'll even co-lead, but I don't want to lead. There's such a reluctance within women to lead. And I think women resist calling themselves a leader, putting themselves into a position of leadership, because they automatically think that leadership is the one at the top or the one out front. Like, you might look at me right now and go, wow, she's leading. Like, I couldn't get up there and talk like she is, so I guess it's not me. I guess I'm not a leader. And they continually just write themselves off. So with women, it's just like, okay, we won't call it leadership then. We'll call it something else. What are you more comfortable with? I'll play the game. See, if you define leadership, leadership most simply defined is influence. Nothing more and nothing less. I borrowed that from John Maxwell. And if leading is simply influence, that I'm suggesting tonight that we're all leaders in some areas of our lives, right? I mean, how many mamas are here? Motherhood is a constant thing of influencing day after day after day. Have you ever tried to get a small child into a snowsuit when they don't want to? That, my friends, is leadership, as you try to convince them. You know, As a mother, I have three adult children now. I can't believe that. I'm an empty nester, which just crazy. But I had a vision for my kids. And it wasn't like, oh, I want one to be a doctor and a lawyer. It wasn't that. I had a vision that they would hear God's voice, that they would be people of character, all of those kinds. I had a vision for what and the whole way through, I clung to that vision of molding and leading them towards that. That is influence, and that is leadership. We think about work teams. All of you have worked on teams at different times. You can think of projects that you've done, either at work or school. I mean, in a team setting, we get to help shape the atmosphere on a working team. Sometimes we even help people organize towards a shared vision. We do that. Now, I'm not a salesperson, but when I find a product I love, I will tell people about it. Honestly, I found myself in Superstore, and someone's like choosing, and I'm like, go with that one. Because this one's, you know, I just, if I love something, I'm going to tell you about it, right? That's influencing. I mean, think of sports teams. Think of small group ministry. We can think of the pack group at school. See, women lead all the time. They just don't call it leadership. They call it being bossy. They call it being nosy, being opinionated. But we don't call it leading. I think of all the little girls in the schoolyard that are trying to organize everybody to play a good game together. And I get to be the mom, and you're the dad, right? You know, how many times we actually kind of cut our daughters off at the knees by you know, telling them what they're doing is wrong. Well, yeah, you have to learn how to lead and, you know, soften the edges and all that kind of stuff. But what's the message that we're telling to our daughters? See, leadership is seeing something that isn't right and saying to yourself, somebody's got to do something. Have you ever had that moment? When you see something in your work or your school or your church or your community and you go, somebody's got to do something. See, that is when you are gutsy enough to say, well, it might as well be me. That is leadership. Recognizing the need, getting a passion for it, and then being gutsy enough to say, why not me? This conference came out of a somebody's got to do something moment. And here we are. Okay, it's the crux of leadership. Interesting question that I've been mulling over for the last few years. Are leaders born or made? Now, some people would more naturally exhibit what we would call leadership. They're outgoing. They have no problem being in front of people. They have a clear vision. They've been organizing people in the play yard since they were four. And they have ability to inspire people towards a preferred future. And those are the ones that we're most familiar with, the ones that are out front with a vision, self-confident, just going for it. But what I, and hear me on this, that is not the only type of leader. And it's interesting because there's a real trend surfacing in leadership studies right now. The pendulum is swinging away from that kind of like hierarchical, uber gifted, here I am leading, everyone follow me kind of model. And it's actually swinging more to a team or collective approach. It's swinging towards more collaboration. So when Darcy and I were graduating from college, which was like 25 years ago, when we went to work with someone, we just assumed that they're going to tell us what to do and we're going to just do it. Now when young people are graduating from college and university, they actually have every expectation that they'll be welcomed onto a team where their voice is valued and their input is welcomed. Now, sometimes us old people have trouble with that because we're like, you got to earn your dues first. But it's really a neat pendulum shift, and I'll tell you why. Because there are more people around the table. There are more gifts around the table. There are more perspectives around the table. And it actually recognizes the value of what more people have to offer. And women, gross generalization alert, because I have to give those, but women tend to excel in collaboration. I mean, don't we all go to the bathroom together in the restaurant? I have to go pee. Do you have to go pee? Let's go, right? But we tend to really enjoy collaboration and bringing along people. So it's good news. This is good news. You don't have to be born with leadership skills. Leadership is actually a learnable set of skills. And there's going to be some things that come really easily to you and some that are more challenging to you, but you can learn it. And I'll tell you why I know that, because I have had to learn it. When I came here as pastor like 10 years ago, I had to learn it. And I'm not perfect, but I'm learning it. And that's great. So in Christian leadership, there are what I call heart skills and hand skills. And heart kind of describes like our character. And it's the foundation of any leading that we'll ever do. So in heart skills, it's things like integrity, meaning that our lives are in alliance. What I say and what I believe is what I actually do and who I am. And it's devastating if there's no if there is incongruency in leadership. Other heart skills are things like being prayerful, servanthood, things like that. And that's where we start, and that's where the church focuses, as it should. But I just don't think it's enough. It's not enough to be a nice Christian lady with a dream. I think we're all called to be, you know, wonderful Christian women empowered by God with hard hand skills in leadership. Things like how to discern a God-given vision. How do we bring along other people towards the vision? How do we build a healthy team environment? How do we communicate well with others? How do we handle conflict? How do we lead ourselves, mentoring, those kinds of things. And so that's really what the workshops will be about tomorrow. And I'm glad that you can partake of those. Okay, I'm going to stop talking for about 5 minutes. And I want you to get into groups of three, two or three, and answer this question. Are you a leader? And if you have difficulty accepting that title, what is your objection? Got it? Are you a leader? If you're having difficulty accepting that title, what are your objections? On your mark, get set, go.
To bring your salvation.
Okay, I'm going to call you back. So we'd love to hear from a few people. Anyone who just calls himself a leader has no problem with it? Melissa, let's hear from Melissa.
What am I supposed to say? Oh, gosh.
Well, you have no problem calling yourself a leader?
No.
No. Did you have, like, encouragement early on, or...?
I think that it has something that's always just come naturally to me, and it has never been, like, forced or, like, I've had to try. It's always just been super easy for me to lead all the time.
Were you, like, organizing people in the schoolyard?
Yes.
Yeah. Love it.
I was probably called bossy on more than one occasion.
Good. Anyone doesn't see themselves as a leader? Back here. Would you mind talking?
Interesting. I sometimes see myself as maybe a facilitator.
A what?
Facilitator.
Yeah. And that's a softer way to make us feel better about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what? I'm good with it. You call it what you want. You know.
So I think a lot of it is to do with myself. It's my own, like how people see me or how I present myself. It's all about me being able to take that stand of saying that I am a leader in something.
Yes.
So I've always been one who hasn't thought that.
Yeah. Somebody else. Back here. I like you already.
For me, I've always been this kind of person that wants to do stuff at the back, and I don't have the confidence to call myself a leader because I come from a place where it's like, if you want to call yourself a leader, then it's like arrogance, especially in the church or something. Mm-hmm. And recently I'm discovering that because of servanthood goes with leadership, if you're able to make out those little contributions and those like work, the foundational stuff it takes for something to happen, then you are actually a leader.
Right.
So it's
right.
not like the position itself right. is like.
Yeah, we get hung up thinking that, you know, oh, you know, I'm a pastor here, so I'm a leader. No, I could be a pastor and no one's following me, right? You could be like a, you know, not a position and people are following you. So we kind of get hung up on that a little bit. Yeah. Leadership, I don't know. I don't know if you'll be able to relate to this, but as a woman, I either feel like I'm not enough or I feel like I'm too much. Right? Does that resonate with you? I live in that tension all the time that, And I also live in the tension of, okay, if I get up here and I'm like all opinionated and all that kind of stuff, will you all think that I think that I'm all that? And really, as women, that really holds us back from leadership hugely. We're women and we're Canadian. And Canadianism, no, that's not a word. Canadian people. Canadians. Sorry. Wow. Can't wait for tomorrow. Canadians have what's called tall poppy syndrome. And I think it's the Aussies or the New Zealanders that talk about this. And tall poppy syndrome is if anyone gets too high, you cut them down. We need everybody down here. The Americans are kind of different. They really do, they do heroes quite well, and they love to see people rise. We don't. We're like, oh, she thinks she's too much. And so, you know, to do something where you actually, you know, get up and lead and have an opinion and have a voice, in my 30s, it felt very uncomfortable because I thought, oh, I hope they know that I don't think I have it all together. I hope they know I'm just faking it. Make no mistake, if you see strong people leading, they're faking it. Are they not? I always think that everyone's smarter, more put together. They're just faking it. And as they fake it, then suddenly they become. Anyway, I'm totally off topic here. Okay. I really believe that it's important to acknowledge the gifts that you have. And when I say leadership, I'm not saying, oh, you got to be a CEO of a company. I have no interest in that. As a stay-at-home mom for 12 years, loved it, committed to it. Like I'm not saying what you have to do. Whatever it is that God has placed within you, though, you have a responsibility to acknowledge. Because he will not use what we cannot acknowledge. And so it begins there and acknowledging that, God, this is how you've made me. These are the gifts I think that you know, this is what's rising up within me. This is the passion. I'm going to acknowledge it. I may not understand all of it. I feel way over my head in it, but I'm going to acknowledge it. See, when I look at a group of women like this, I see a room full of amazing potential with so much like seeds within you. And I think that's why I'm so passionate to call it out and to water and to plant and do all of those things, because it needs to be cultivated in order to grow into something. Because we need women that will rise up and lead. We need women who will rise up in our communities. Oh, our communities need leadership. Our churches need leadership. This nation needs leadership. The global community needs leadership. We are surrounded by circumstances that need to change. We're surrounded by circumstances where someone's got to stand up and say, somebody's got to do something. But what happens is we're like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. Will they think I think I'm all that? Oh, I don't know if I'm allowed to. Do the work of all of that. But we need to rise up. Sometimes people say, well, how do I know what's in me? I always encourage women to go on a bit of a treasure hunt in their own lives. And you can ask things like, what are you doing when you feel like this is what I was born to do? You know that moment that comes every once in a while? I'm having that moment right now. What are you passionate about? What comes easily to you? There's just some things that's just easy. What do others see in you? This is huge. If people that you really love and respect say, you know what, I see this in you, believe them. You don't have to run out and do anything with it, but just, yeah, okay, I'm going to take note. I'm going to take note of that. And I always ask, you know, as a little girl, what did you want to be when you grew up? And so it's interesting because when you ask that question, you'll often find threads of the next steps. I have always been passionate about helping people do well. You can see it right back to when I was 10 years old. How it's expressed itself has changed over the years, but it's always been there. I get to travel around the world a lot because my husband and I work in international mission. And I actually resigned from Living Waters, double tears, a couple weeks ago. And we'll be concluding my pastoral ministry here. So this is kind of my last, like, hurrah event. I'll still be preaching here, which is pretty cool. But because we travel a lot, I get to meet women literally around the globe. And it doesn't matter where I go, the common themes that come up for women is confusion about their role. Doesn't matter if we're in Siberia or Armenia or India, doesn't matter where we are. Confusion about role and a lack of confidence to walk forward. And my question is, what would happen if women in the church, if God's daughters really understood who they were, if they valued that, if they owned what God had made them to be, what could happen? And that is what fuels me. God is not looking for superstars. He's not looking for CEOs. I mean, how many CEOs do we need? He's not looking for extraordinary. What he is looking for is ordinary women who are willing. Can I get an amen? I'm like ready to go to the altar. Oh, okay. Well, before we go, Rob, if you can put some sort of quiet song on, because I don't want us to hurry out of here. And I think in your little thing, your booklet, or maybe it's not there, but anyway, hopefully it'll be on the screen, the questions. Am I owning what God has deposited in me? That's the question. The second question is, what am I afraid of? Okay, so we're going to hang tight here for about 5 minutes, and I want you to reflect on that, and then Joanne will come back up, and we'll dismiss you. Okay, what am I owning what God has deposited in me? Am I owning it? And what am I afraid of? Am I owning what God has deposited in me? And what am I afraid of?